Mr. Nice.
May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. Before you, we've raised several issues. The most important issue, I believe, of which is the facial constitutionality of BISD's policy. The district court here held that it was not facially unconstitutional based on an analysis to a right to education under the U.S. Constitution.
What's the policy again, just so we're clear?
The policy, is, I think in the district court's language, is the assignment of level one educational aids to severely disabled students for one-on-one care, including accompanying those students to the bathroom.
So level one aid as opposed to what?
As opposed to, our argument is level three based on the Texas Administrative Code, but the TEA's educational materials that we had in the record, I think is at least a level two, stretching their reasoning about
so,
it.
So in your view, to the level one part of this violates the Texas Educational Code?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so I get that, and we could discuss that, but how do you jump from there to that it facially violates the Constitution?
Well, Your Honor,
that's where the difficulty for me is.
I understand. So I've got two aspects to that. One would be to the due process right, and one to the equal protection right. As to due process, this policy affirmatively or allows or compels, in the language of Edwards, violations to due process by systematically putting some of the most vulnerable students in the district in the care of aides that are not licensed or trained to be providing the care that they're assigned to.
Why is the difference between a level one and a level three aid of constitutional significance? That's what I'm getting at. I'm sure there are differences that you can tell me about, but why is it of constitutional significance?
I think it comes from the scope of practice authorized for those levels of aids. And I think we characterize the level one as almost clerical duties. I can't remember exactly all the language, but if you read the statute, they're allowed to do like attendance, help get materials passed out to the students, and things that do not involve, I don't think the word individual even appears in the level one area. And so I think
are you telling me that a level one aide is clearly not authorized just to take someone to the bathroom, like is one of the incidents in this case?
Yes, but I would like to just clarify that if he was taken by like a level three aide and a level one aide, that would be okay. But I think to answer specifically your question, that if a level one only was assigned to do that, yes, that would involve a violation.
Okay.
Because the level two and level three are given the authority to interact directly with the students, which and will also involve physical interaction with the students, like diapering them, taking them to the toilet, which in two cases, two different instances with our client, it resulted in an injury. And BISD's expert also said that in order to be implementing physical therapy, they would have to have been trained by a physical therapist. And so we have a letter I know that was put in evidence from one of the coaches, Coach Shirley, to Miguel Cordova. And she was asking during one instance where he was in the playground with his aide, is this person even trained to do physical therapy on JC? Because when I see the aide grab him, he looks like JC's about to break. And that it looks like the aide touches him like that most days. So aside from the actual severe physical harm he suffered, he suffers mentally when he's not being cared for appropriately by these aides. And I think as far as
I understand that this happened to JC, and the facts of this case are very bad. And I have every sympathy for JC. But the issue for me is, why is the difference, why is, when you say it's facially unconstitutional to have this policy, level one versus level three, I ask myself, okay, where in the Constitution do I look for to know that? I mean, it seems counterintuitive to me that is a distinction of constitutional significance.
Well, Your Honor, I
get that you think it violates the Texas law.
Yes, Your Honor.
Regulation.
I might even suppose then that even if he was in the right factual scenario, that even if he had the right level aid, that he could still have been harmed in a way that does violate the Constitution. I think we're not arguing so much that just because he was a level one and only because of that, that it is facially unconstitutional. It is because of the other facts that exist in our case, that his aide not only already had broken his teeth once before, but that Miguel Cordova testified that aide was not remediated after that, and that they kept that same aide with him. And so because he's actually suffered bodily harm based on the types of job assignments that are reserved only for level 2 and 3 aides, that it facially violates the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Because they are inevitably going to be in situations where they have to physically maneuver or handle or care for these students, which could, since we're not on the moving force analysis and just facial constitutionality, could lead to a bodily injury such that his right to due process is violated. As recognized under Beaumont.
Well, since you mentioned moving force, what if we assumed that the policy is, I don't know, if we assume the policy is unconstitutional, it still has to be moving force under Monell?
No, Your Honor, if the policy is facially unconstitutional, it satisfies the moving force.
All right, so let's assume that it is facially constitutional, but then you could still win if you show that the policy is the moving force behind the violation.
Yes, Your Honor.
So talk about that.
Okay. So as to a direct moving force analysis, we can satisfy that element with a facial constitutionality. We can also satisfy it with a direct analysis or an analysis of a failure to train and supervise. Mm-hmm. So that moving force element can be met directly, we think, by showing the due process and equal protection violations that will come from that policy. First, as to due process, I think the Hernandez case helps us see that not only is there no specific type of harm required, but that we also have, there's case law that also it must be meeting a legitimate state goal and maintaining an atmosphere conducive to learning. So as we begin the analysis, before we even get to the types of notice that the board had and the types of injuries that occurred, that we have to look at whether there's a legitimate state goal in maintaining an atmosphere conducive to learning with this policy. And I don't think there is one. I don't think BISD has articulated one. So I think there, as to the moving force element, it would be already in our favor because they can't show that there was a legitimate basis for maintaining an atmosphere conducive to learning.
Moving force had to do with causation? Right.
Yes, Your Honor. So as to causation, we beyond that, assuming maybe there is a legitimate reason for the state to be for BISD to be doing this, we've got an audit from 2009 and 2014 that is some of the earliest temporal evidence that we have that the board had direct knowledge that their staff was not able to manage the certifications properly, that there was due process violations resulting in red flags in the language of its own audit, and the gross negligence of students with special needs over many years. And so that's where it begins. And so once our client gets injured in the timeline, our expert, Art Rendon, also was able to show that these types of incidents are reported to the board. So we can show that the board was constantly on notice of these kinds of issues with their licensing and that they were causing due process violations. And up to our client finally being injured in 2016 when it has tooth broken. And then again, Miguel Cordova and says that they kept him on, they kept Victor Villarreal on our clients as his one-to-one aide, despite having broken his tooth, despite knowing that there was no remedial training of him, and despite his knowledge that the aide lied about what happened, which is a major issue that we have with the district court's ruling as to that injury and what transpired in the bathroom. I know it is difficult to determine factually what happened in the bathroom, but we don't think that is all that matters. We think the amount of evidence going back so many years and all these other circumstantial factors show more of the moving force coming through. And specifically with how he lied about it, I would first point out that the district court relied on hearsay contradicted by its own declarant to the extent that Carlos Guerra is the one that testified that Victor Villarreal was the one that said it was an accident. And so if he testifies that the aide said it was an accident, but then also testifies that he didn't believe the aide, It seems to be a credibility determination, not only about our or their witness, but about what Villarreal said was an accident.
Why did you non-suit Mr. Villarreal?
Well, we tried to serve him initially, and we served the wrong Victor Villarreal at first, and then we got him, and he disappeared after we served him. I know he was from Mexico. I'm not sure if he's ever come back to the States, but we weren't able to find him after we served him, and so we eventually non-suited him.
But you didn't bring any suits under state law of any kind?
No, Your Honor.
Just this one federal claim?
Yeah, well, I mean, we bring the moving force, 1983 claims. ADA also.
Right.
But yes, Your Honor.
Federal law claims.
Yes, Your Honor. Federal claims only is what we brought.
What is your best argument that this violates the TEA provision?
I would rest on the district court's analysis of that, but the fact that the administrative code for the
level
ones?
Yes,
Your Honor. I would rest on the district court's analysis of that. Really, we're not appealing that. we think that was a correct analysis.
He assumes it, but I guess what I'm looking at is the text of it, and I don't see. I mean, there's nothing in state law that says that level one aides can't take people to the restroom, is there?
That's correct, Your Honor. I don't think that's the case. I think the district court put it well, is that it's a level one aides being in one-to-one assignments with severely disabled students, including accompanying those students to the bathroom.
So there's nothing about the restroom that's the problem.
Excuse me?
The restroom, there's nothing specific about that. If a level one aide walking a severely disabled student down the hall or sitting with a disabled student in a classroom.
Well, I think that would be. I think it would at least, so to clarify a little bit more there too, BISD's expert, Dr. Garcia, said that the proper way to do that is with two people, first of all. So two people should have taken them.
But, for the restroom?
Yes, Your Honor.
But what I'm asking is there something specific about, like nothing in this regulation says anything to me, or the administrative code says anything to me about restrooms, and so I'm trying to figure out the nature of your argument.
I think it would come from the use of the word individual in those, that the level one aide doesn't have the authority for themselves in their scope of practice to individually care for a student like that.
And so a level one aide could not walk the student down, say, to the playground?
I think to the playground, I think, would be okay, because they're not going to be involved in any kind of toileting, or presumably not any type of toileting or diapering at the playground. But if they were going to the bathroom, that they need at least one level three aide and another person. Their expert says that they should have had two people take JC to the bathroom. And so one of them at least would have had to have been a level three aide.
So a level one aide can one-on-one walk the student down the hall?
I don't think.
But can walk a student to the? I just want to make. I'm not trying to trick you.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to make sure I understand it. So you can, if you're a level one aide, one on one, walk the student to the playground. That's okay.
I think it depends a little bit on the nature of the disability of the student, though, Your Honor. I think the district court, for example, used the language severely disabled student. So if a level one is not assigned as a one to one aide for a less disabled student, certainly a level one aide could take them to the bathroom, even probably on their own.
I'm just trying to ask about your particular client, just about JC. So
okay,
a level one aide could walk JC to the playground?
I think, Your Honor, I think depending on the nature of what JC would have been going to the playground for, if he's just going there to play, I think he can do that under the supervision of his teacher, which I think is what's in the regulation. And assuming that he's not going to do anything there, maybe I should say it like this, assuming he's not going to do anything that is within the scope of practice of a level three aide. So if he's able to take a student down the hallway, it kind of would seem, why would he not be able to also take them to the bathroom too? I think maybe you might be going there.
I'm just trying to understand the nature of, it seems to me that the linchpin of your argument, you have to have a violation of state law. I mean, we can get into whether and to what extent that's going to be sufficient for you. Maybe not all state law violations violate the substantive due process clause. Like, there's any number of other issues with your argument. But at the foundation, I take your principal point to be this was a violation of state law. It was irrational. It served no purpose, and therefore it violates substantive due process.
Your Honor, but we do rely on that, but I don't think it's just that, just alone the violation of state law. And I think one way I would also one other thing I would mention too is as to like our failure to train and supervise analyses. we don't even really need to bring up that they're not licensed properly. They, for example, there's no evidence in the record that this aide was trained by a physical therapist, which was, again, their expert testified that aides need to be trained by a physical and occupational therapist in order to implement physical and occupational therapy from the student's IEP. So even if he was properly licensed, if he's not trained to implement the kind of therapy that their expert says that he needs to be trained by, then he's not going to be trained, and that would still satisfy the moving force element of our claim. So I do understand that the emphasis on the violation of state law has to do, I think, a little more with our facial constitutionality argument and the more direct moving force analysis. But again, for example, I think we – excuse me. I apologize, Your Honor.
Thank you. You've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. Mr. Campbell.
Thank you, Judge Ho, and may it please the court. Let me start, Judge Oldham, with where you ended, which is what is the purpose of this administrative regulation? And let me first be clear, because I think there's been some misstatements about this. This is not a statute. It's not in the Texas Education Code. The authorizing provision in the Education Code is in Chapter 22, which has to do with the State Board of Education certification of teachers. As a result of that statute, the Texas Education Agency adopted 230 in the administrative code, which has to do with certification of teachers and the provision we're looking at, educational aides. Educational aides serve a lot of different functions in school districts. For example, in Brownsville ISD, there are over 5,000 special education students. The school, they need differing levels of support. Some, like this student, need help diapering themselves, feeding, a lot of support. Some need minimal support, but aides are instrumental in that. But educational aides obviously apply outside that context. It may just be in a first grade classroom to walk a student to the bathroom if she needs to go. So when you look at the provisions in the administrative regulation that TEA announced, it's focused on curriculum and teaching. Because the concern is you don't want someone who just has a high school diploma teaching students. You see that not only in the text of the regulation, you also see it in the requirements of a level 1 aide. To become a level 3 aide as opposed to a level 1 aide, there's no requirement for any kind of training to be a physical therapist. There's no training whatsoever. The only difference in the regulation between a level 1 aide and a level 3 aide is that a level 3 aide either has 30 hours of college credit or has 3 years of experience as a level 1 or level 2 aide. Importantly, as the district court recognized in this case, Mr. Villarreal had a associate's degree in social work and had a bachelor's degree in special education. So the only reason that he was a level 1 aide and a level 3 aide is frankly because he just didn't fill out the application and pay the fee. You also see that in the regulation. That's all it takes to be elevated from a level 1 to a level 3 aide, nothing else. Now, all that being said, Judge Oldham, I really think that this, I know you said it's the linchpin of the argument. I do think that it is kind of a threshold issue for plaintiffs in this case. Really, I think it's a red herring. In the district court's decision, of course, as you pointed out, the district court did not hold that Brownsville ISD violated this regulation. The magistrate judge had found that. We objected strenuously because it's not uncommon in school districts to use aides for things like walking a student to the playground, walking to the bathroom. For a student like JC, there's no reason you need 30 hours of college credit to help him eat his peas at lunch. Because of the need that school districts have for educational aides, it's not uncommon for them to use level 1, level 2, level 3, whatever's available, and of course consistent with the student's individualized education plan, or IEP, under IDEA. Now, in this case, there were concerns about whether the IEP was being followed. As the court knows, those were all resolved in 2017. As a result of a due process complaint that was resolved between the parties. This lawsuit followed as compensatory damages only, and that's why we're here. Now, for this compensatory damages claim, the reason I say that I think that this whole argument about the level 1 versus level 3 aide is a red herring is the district court cited Stern v. Tarrant County Appraisal District, this court's decision where the court explained that you can't use state law violations to satisfy constitutional injury. And at this point, the only thing that's left that's necessary is some sort of federal law constitutional claim for either their 1983 claim or their ADA 504 claim. And all through the briefing and today, I've never heard a response to the Stern v. Tarrant County case, where this court said the reason that you can't use a state law violation to satisfy constitutional injury is it would transmogrify state law into the Constitution. And there's some good discussion in that case about the problems that could arise in the future if the court were to do that. So there are a lot of ways that the court could resolve this case. It's late. I know that you've already had two arguments. So let me just give you what I think is the easiest way for the court to resolve this case. And to do that, let me do two things. Let me first point out the argument that I think is worth following, and also clarify a fact in the record that I don't think is entirely clear from the briefing that's important for the court to realize. So first, as for the argument, on the 1983 claim, the district court gave this court at least two different ways to resolve it, either causation or is there a constitutional injury at all? Because of course there has to be a policy adopted by the board that that causes some sort of constitutional injury. And what I haven't heard today and really didn't see addressed by plaintiffs in the briefing is the question of what is the constitutional injury. They've tried to allege two. The problem with the bodily integrity claim, and maybe this is the elephant in the room, is that as sympathetic as JC is in this case, the reality is that sovereign immunity, governmental immunity, bars what would be the obvious claim to assert in this case, a negligence claim. Because it bars that claim, this case, I think, for the past 7 years has been a case in search of some kind of legal theory to support it. And we bounced around between alleging that the school district is abusing kids to saying that it's this policy to today hearing that somehow there should have been training by a physical therapist. When the reality is that everyone agrees that the best that we know of what happened in the bathroom when the student broke his arm is that the aide, after initially lying, for which the aide was asked to resign and essentially resigned in lieu of termination, after initially lying and saying that he didn't know what happened, he admitted that he slipped and fell in the bathroom, grabbed the student as they went down, and unfortunately the student was injured. The school district did an investigation of that. That's the best explanation we've been able to figure out as to what happened. And really, although there's been a lot of back and forth about whether that's what really happened, I don't know that it would be any better for plaintiff if it was something else. For example, there's been some kind of insinuation, I think, in the briefing that maybe it wasn't negligence, maybe this was something he did intentionally. Well, if that was the case, that might help them on the constitutional injury, because as this court knows, a negligent injury can't support a bodily integrity claim on the Constitution. It might help them there, but that would be a claim against Villarreal, who they chose to non-suit in this case and dismiss their claims against. It wouldn't support a 1983 claim under Monell against the school board. So legally, I think the easiest way for the court to resolve this, obviously the causation is one way to resolve it, but frankly, I think the easiest way for the court to resolve this would be to flip ahead to the last two points the district court made under the 1983 claim and just say there's really no equal protection or bodily integrity claim in this case. And then for the ADA and 504 claim, the district court obviously...
Why is that easier? Why would a bodily integrity holding be easier than moving force? So bodily integrity, you do have bad injuries here.
Yes. So I say it's easier only because you really don't even have to address the facial unconstitutional claim. You don't have to address the failure to train claim separately from... Because it seems like the district court was unclear about whether they were saying that there was some sort of policy that had been adopted to use level one, not level three aides, or maybe it was a failure to train claim. And either way, the district court addressed both. So, I mean, I think the district court's analysis is sound and you could do it that way. And first address whether it's facially unconstitutional and then go through moving force for the alleged policy. And then, separately address the...
the policy, as I understand it, the putative policy is level one versus level three.
Right. And
they have some statistics to back that up. Okay, so that's the putative policy. But what is your argument? So the new moving force, we haven't even talked about the standard for moving force, which is quite high. What would be, what is your response to the idea that, well, that if they hadn't followed that policy, then this injury wouldn't have happened?
Right. So it is a high standard that obviously helps my side of the case. And so, but I don't know that we need it in this case because, frankly, I don't know what the difference would be. There's really never been an explanation as to why it would make a difference whether it was a level 3 or level 1-8 in the bathroom, especially given the fact that in this case, Mr. Villarreal met all the requirements in statute of being a level 3 aide, except that he hadn't submitted an application to TEA to have him designated as a level 3 aide. But I think there's one other...
Is there anything in a level 1 versus level 3 categorization that speaks to the propensity to prevent injuries to severely disabled students?
There's not. And that's exactly our point, Judge Duncan, is that the point of the regulation, to the extent it even matters, is focused on curriculum and teaching in the classroom. And there's nothing in that regulation that says anything about general safety of students otherwise. I mean, there are other provisions in the education code that require background checks and other things to protect student safety. But the other problem, I think, with addressing that claim instead of just cutting to the chase and jumping to the constitutional claim, is there is this assumption that this is a policy. And there's really nothing in the record to show that this was a policy adopted by the board. My friends on the other side point to this 2009 audit. Frankly, because most of the focus in this case has been on the legal arguments, there hasn't been a lot of discussion about that audit. But before you go down the road of talking about saying anything in the opinion about a policy that was adopted, go to page, I think it's 429 of the record, and read that audit, because there is nothing in that audit that says anything about level 1 versus level 3 aides. Absolutely nothing. The three parts of that audit that they point to, the first one recognizes that there's not a high enough number of LSSPs. Licensed specialists in school psychology to address concerns about diagnosing kids, which is always a problem in special ed, is the child find and being able to diagnose what's going on with the kiddos. So that's the first finding that you'll see. I think it's early in that report. It's finding one. Finding three doesn't have anything to do with certification of aides. It has to do with certification of mid-management specialists who can supervise other employees. And it's just a sentence under finding three, again, in that report that addresses that. And the last finding that they point to in saying that there was some kind of policy or notice to the board about this is a note that the legal fees for due process claims were too high. This was before my firm was representing the district. So that's the concern that's brought up there. And turn from there to the next exhibit. It's on 459 of the record, which is in 2014, there was a follow-up to that audit to go through, and there's an attachment that goes through all of those complaints and says they've been addressed. So there is nothing in that audit or in the record indicating that this policy was ever promulgated by the board, brought to the board, or approved by the board. So that's another problem. I think there is a pretty serious causation issue, and that it's not clear that it would have made any difference whether it's a level 3 or level 1 aid claim. But there's even a question as to what the policy was, because in a 1983 context, of course, it has to be the board's policy. This court said that, I think, more times than I could count. On the ADA and 504 claim that's left, the district court resolved that by just saying, because this is compensatory damages and they're getting money damages, you need deliberate indifference. And again, you don't see that in this case. I mean, I've already talked about the audit. I think if you go back to that audit again, you'll see that this was not something that was on the board's radar, presented to the board. No one was even thinking about this at that time or since. You've also heard today, and you've seen in the briefing, that this student unfortunately had another incident where his tooth was chipped. Sorry. Where his tooth was chipped. And that was by the same aide. But no one at the time wanted this aide replaced. In fact, you know that from the plaintiff's own testimony. I mean, the school district investigated it. There was no remediation plan. The district court pointed this out in the opinion. No remediation plan because there didn't appear to be any need for a remediation plan. You can look at, I think it's on page 1650 of the record, where Villarreal's supervisor at the time said, I talked to him. Our plan was to monitor him more closely when he's using the sink, because apparently what happened is he fell and chipped a tooth on the sink. There was no deliberate indifference. There was a discussion with the mother. She told the school district, I think that my son likes this aid. I want him to continue. No one at the time had any concerns about it. Obviously, this would be a different case if at the time the mother had said, I want a different accommodation. I want you to get a nurse with my student, or a level 3 aide, or something along those lines. That just didn't happen. This tooth incident was an accident. Everyone agreed it was an accident, and everyone moved forward from it. So for both of those reasons, I think looking through the record, you really can't find any evidence of deliberate indifference. And then also, we pointed out in our briefing that because we're talking about an ADA or 504 claim, I mean, all we're trying to do with this aid, frankly, is to make sure that this student can participate in school. This was a 21-year-old student who obviously has severe issues in life, but he was part of our program to try to give him the best education that he could, the best school experience that he could, until he aged out of the system. And so one way that the school district did that was by giving him an aide to go with him to lunch and feed him, to walk him to the bathroom, to help diaper him when he needed that. I mean, in the briefing, there is the assertion that somehow Brownsville ISD had a keep the trash policy. And frankly, I think that's a little bit inappropriate to say about these aides that are doing this kind of work day in and day out. So that is one reason. Obviously, the second reason we put it out in the briefing on the ADA 504 is that there was no requested accommodation that the school district denied. All that happened in this case is that the district did its best to try to provide this student with an education in a very difficult circumstance. Unfortunately, the student was injured, and under state law, any negligence claims are out, and because apparently they were unable to serve Villarreal, they can't assert some kind of deliberate indifference claim against Mr. Villarreal based on some sort of claim, if there was evidence to support it, that he engaged in some sort of attack on the student, as opposed to what the evidence shows, which is just that it was an accident when he slipped and fell. So with that said, I see that I've got 3 minutes left, but if there are no further questions, I'm happy to give that time back to the court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Neese, you've reserved 5 minutes.
Your Honor, I would first like to address the idea that it was certainly an accident. I think I did touch on it a little bit, not only based on the testimony from the aide, but one thing I didn't mention that I would like to also show that this does, I think, present a genuine dispute of material fact is that despite the fact that the aide lied and tried to say that he slipped and pulled down our student by grabbing him, or our client by grabbing him by the arm, our x-ray report from our doctor shows that his forearm would have had to have been twisted like a lever in order to create the kind of twisting fracture that he had in his arm. And I think based on some of the case law that we have looked at, that these kinds of incidents rise to a constitutional level in cases like where teachers were implementing experimental educational techniques or sexually assaulting students. And on that spectrum of fact patterns, we think that this at least has a dispute as to material fact, that it falls on that end of the spectrum, that because his arm appears to have been used like a lever to have been fractured, that there's evidence from Coach Shirley that she jerks him while he's at PE. I think, Judge Oldham, this may go to your question too, is that he shouldn't be doing that, even as a level 1 aide. Shouldn't be taking him out there to the playground and trying to jerk him or to do physical therapy out there. That's exactly where we had a problem with him out there, what was at the playground. And that's in Coach Shirley's letter to Miguel Cordova, who was the same person that left Villarreal in the care of our client. One other thing I would like to touch on too is, and this was actually briefed at the district court level, BISD has the obligation to ensure its staff is licensed. It is not Vidal's job to go make sure he's got a level 3 and he only had a level 1. It is BISD's obligation under the administrative code to ensure that their staff is properly licensed. To the extent they want to bring up other districts, I know we touch on the presumption of regularity and under our equal protection claim, and I don't have a lot of time, so I would rest on my brief as to that. But Judge Duncan, I'd like to go back to one of the very first things you asked me about the facial constitutionality of it as to equal protection. And I think very clearly, I can maybe understand why it's more of a stretch on the due process part, but very clearly, under equal protection, this policy says these aides are being given to this class of students and everybody else is getting licensed personnel. So on its face, it says that these students are getting unlicensed personnel, everybody else is getting them. And
what are the classes then that are being?
I would say, if I could track the language of the district court similarly here, I'd say one-to-one severely disabled students that have one-to-one aides and including accompanying those students to the bathroom. The types of severely disabled students that require higher levels of aid certification are the class of students that are being discriminated against here because they're not being given licensed personnel, which is unlike everybody else at the school, at least presumably, that all have licensed staff. And so I would run very quickly over to the moving force with the equal protection claim too, because similar to the due process analysis of whether it was arbitrary or capricious or met a legitimate state goal maintaining an atmosphere conducive to learning, equal protection asks if there's a rational basis to meet a legitimate state interest. I think at the very lowest level, obviously since JC is a disabled student, that class of people has the lowest level of scrutiny, which is rational basis, but there's no rational basis to be doing
that. What's your response to the argument that counsel made that the difference between level 1 and level 3 goes to sort of a number of hours of educational attainment, so that it goes really more to curriculum than to supervision?
Well, I would make one brief analogy just to us. I have a nursing degree and a law degree, and I need my license to practice both. Even with the degree. And as to Vidal specifically, the name of his bachelor's degree doesn't, I don't think at summary judgment, allow the inference that he has the required hours under the code to do his job. Just because he has a bachelor's degree that may have had some family law in it, I think at least at this stage that there's an inference, or rather the inference should be drawn in our favor, that just because he has a bachelor's with those words in it doesn't mean that he has the hours that are required under the code.
Thank you.
I would entertain any last questions if any of the judges have one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted, and we are adjourned for the day.